So over the last few weeks, we've been talking about church government, and we started by just an overview of church government, where authority resides in the church. And the next week, we talked about offices in the church, inside of church government. And using the word officers can sometimes be a little bit confusing because that's not a word that the Bible uses. And generally, we want to stay away from creating new words to describe Bible ideas. But in this case, I feel like it's appropriate. And what are the offices in the church, if we were going to agree to use that word? What are the offices in the church that we find described in the context of church government?
Deacons.
Yeah, deacons,
elders,
evangelists, and then there's at least one more.
Apostles.
Apostles, right? So when we go to Ephesians chapter 4, there's four offices mentioned there. There's one that probably doesn't fit into the category quite as well as the others. But in Ephesians chapter 4, it talks about how Christ gave gifts to men. He gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, and some to be teaching pastors. Or he's talking about elders there. So prophets are not an office in church government in the same way that the others are, because it doesn't appear that prophets had authority in the church, but they did have the will of God communicated to them, and so they had the gift of prophecy in speaking God's will to us. That office no longer exists. The office of an apostle no longer exists, but evangelists are still here, and so are elders, teaching pastors. So today we're really starting into the meat of our discussion on church government, where we'll give our attention entirely to those offices. And there's four that we'll talk about. Today we'll start talking about apostles. In a few weeks we'll talk about elders, after that deacons, and then we'll end with evangelists. And if you'll notice on the schedule that we passed out when we started this Bible study, for each of these offices inside of church government, there's a few topics that we want to focus on. First is the idea of appointment, and we'll talk about everything related to that. So when we have this information for a particular office, we'll talk about the qualifications to become that part of that office. We'll talk about the selection process and the biblical procedure for installing or actually appointing a person to that office. We'll also talk about the functions and responsibilities of a person holding that office. And then if there are other topics to discuss, we'll address those. And sometimes there will be and sometimes there won't. And so today, like I said, we're going to begin by talking about apostles. And on the subject of their, you know, overarching responsibilities, when you think of the role of an apostle inside of church government, what is that? What is their, in general terms, what is the responsibility? What was the responsibility of the apostles in church government? Yeah, that's a big part of it, maybe the biggest part of it. And of course, we remember what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 2, how the apostles, along with Jesus himself, are the foundation of the church. And so the apostles, when it comes to church government, have a role of their own. Apostles have authority in the church, and deacons have authority in some form, elders have authority in some form, evangelists have authority in some form, but the apostles are on their own. And that's part of the reason that apostles don't exist anymore, because their function, their responsibilities were unique to the first century and the establishment of the church. So let's begin by talking about the appointment of apostles. And I think we've got some really good questions to talk about today because, you know, in the modern church, we do deal with the appointment and qualification and installment of elders. We do deal with, in the modern church, the appointment, qualifications, and installment of evangelists and of deacons. But the appointment, qualifications, and installment of apostles is not something that we deal with at all, but it's still a very interesting study. So to begin with, I want us to talk about the original 12 apostles. And the reason I want us to begin by talking about the original 12 is because the situation for Matthias is a little bit different than the other 12, and the situation for Paul is a little bit different than the original 12. So first, thinking of the original 12, let's talk about qualifications. Can you think of anything in the New Testament that talks about the criteria that Jesus might have used to appoint the original 12 apostles?
Eyewitness of Christ, of Jesus.
Right. So, but when he picked them, were they eyewitnesses of his whole ministry yet? They weren't yet, But the plan is that they would be, right? Jesus selected them so they might be with him. Part of the reason they were apostles is because it was important that they be with him during the entire ministry. Other comments about qualifications of some form that Jesus might have used to select the original 12 apostles?
Seemed like they had an occupation.
Yeah, they all had an occupation that we're aware of. Ben and then Bob.
Well, I get that, and I'm not sure why I think this way, but I thought they were mostly followers of John, too.
We know that some of them were. Yeah, we know that some of them were.
I know that was...
Peter and Andrew and James and John, I think, were all at first disciples of John the Baptist, but I don't know about the others.
They were all Jews.
Yeah, they were all Jews, which makes sense because the gospel was first was first preached to the Jews.
They were looking for the Messiah too in that early bunch. You know, when they gathered, like Ben said about John, you know, they were looking for the Messiah.
Yeah.
From the Old Testament.
You get the feeling they were, that these were spiritually minded men. Bob, did I get your comment yet?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure it's worth making, but I was wondering, I'll just ask a question. Was most of the, when they mentioned his occupation, I was thinking along those lines too, and it seemed to me like most of those that were picked were chosen from a more lowly occupation as opposed to a high up official, you know.
Well, see, what I was going to mention on that, and this really isn't a qualification necessarily, but this might say something about just how deliberate Jesus was, because you said some of them had a low occupation, which is correct. There were some of them that were fishermen, you know, no education at all, but were there some that had a great deal of education?
Physicians.
Yeah, yeah, there were some that were very educated.
But
think about...
He wasn't the original 12 that you wanted to focus on.
Well, for...
Yeah,
Matthew was probably educated. And let's talk about Matthew for a second. What was Matthew's occupation? He was a tax collector. And so who did he work for? He worked for the Roman government. And that's in contrast to who else among the 12 apostles?
Simon.
He was a zealot. So you've got Matthew, the tax collector, who is working for the Roman government, compared to Simon the zealot. And what did it mean to be a zealot?
You were pro-Israel, anti-government.
Yeah, exactly. You were radically pro-Israel and radically anti-Rome. So I think that's really interesting. You've got fishermen working alongside government employees, and you've got someone who's obviously loyal to Rome working alongside someone who's very anti-Rome. And it worked. And it worked. And I think Jesus must have done this on purpose. You know, how quickly did these men resolve all of their differences? I would say maybe immediately, because their focus very quickly went to the gospel and understanding who Jesus was. I still wish, though, I could have heard some of the conversations between Matthew and Simon. Yeah.
And they had a choice. I mean, he asked them to come, and they did.
And they did. And they did. So, on the topic of qualifications of the original 12, we really don't know very much. I think Dwayne's point, though, is worth remembering, that Jesus called them so that they would be with him. The purpose of one purpose of them being called to be apostles is so that they would be witnesses of Jesus' entire ministry, which makes sense when we go to the appointment of Matthias. Let's go over to Acts chapter 1.
One other quick thing about some of them. You're talking about the differences in people. Some of them were related, and that could have been challenging or difficult to deal with, just like congregations today. You know, we have groups of people that are related, some that aren't, and putting all those together.
Yeah, yeah. And it worked. It worked for the apostles, and it can work today.
Why did it work?
Well, because... I guess it's kind of a rhetorical question. I think it was their love for the truth, their love for the gospel.
Love, love that Christ brought.
Yeah. It makes everything else so insignificant.
They were willing to give up themselves.
Yeah. So let's talk about Matthias. We'll read this, but can someone tell me without reading? There was two men who are identified to fill the place of Judas, and who were those two men?
Barsabbas.
Yep, Barsabbas. I think Barsabbas, who is also called Justus. And then the other one was Matthias. And we know that Matthias was ultimately selected. And at this time, when they were selecting a person to fill the place of Judas, what was the criteria? What was the qualification that these men had to fulfill to even be an option?
Well, I already mentioned that they had to be eyewitnesses of Jesus from the beginning, from the time of the baptism until the time that he died.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and read that. This is Acts chapter 1, starting in verse 21. Verses 21 and 22. Someone could read that, please.
For these men who have accompanied us all the times that the Lord Jesus went in and out among us, beginning from the baptism of John to the day when he was taken up from us, one of these must become a witness with us of his resurrection.
Very good. And then in verse 23, we've got the two men that they identified. They proposed two. Joseph, called Barsabbas, whose surname was Justus, and Matthias. So there weren't a lot of people that fit this criteria, it sounds like. Maybe there was more, but these were the two that were proposed. And they had to be a witness of Jesus from the very beginning, from his baptism, all the way to the very end. And for what purpose was that? What was it that they were actually going to be witnessing?
His resurrection.
Yeah. These men were meant to be witnesses of his resurrection. It's interesting to think of apostles in that way. One of the main things that they were trying to convey to the world was that they saw the resurrection of Jesus Christ. There's so many other ways that we could describe what they were witnessing, but here it says they were witnesses of his resurrection. And so it was important. It was important. If this was the gospel, if this was the message they were bringing, it had to be a person who saw Jesus from the very beginning to the very end.
So this leads us to believe that Paul, who was born out of due season, must have been there when Jesus was crucified.
Well, let's get to that. That's the next thing we should talk about. So, Paul is an interesting person, because for Paul, we really don't have this kind of qualification outlined specifically, and I get the impression, and it sounds like this may be a discussion in itself, but I get the impression that probably Paul didn't witness the entire life of Jesus. Does anyone agree with that or disagree with that? Yeah, I don't think he met this qualification that was given for Matthias. I think it's very unlikely that Paul was with Jesus. I think we can say for certain that Paul was not with Jesus and did not witness Jesus from the baptism of Jesus all the way through his resurrection. But in what ways was Paul qualified? Paul's just an interesting character. There were some special things that happened for Paul that made him qualified in ways that maybe he wouldn't have been qualified otherwise.
I would say it was Paul's previous life to demonstrate the power of God to take somebody and turn them completely around.
Sure, yeah.
You know, that's a story that a lot of people like to hear because they identify with the fact that they can do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so in that way, Paul was definitely uniquely qualified. Another thing I was thinking of, too, All of the 12 plus Matthias, at least one thing they did all share in common is that they were personally in the presence of Jesus. Was Paul ever personally in the presence of Jesus?
Yes.
Sure, he absolutely was. If we go to Acts chapter 9, on the road to Damascus, he was there. He saw Jesus. Jesus was physically in his presence. So, just like all of the other 12, Paul could say, I saw Jesus. Not in the same way that the 12 did, but he could say, I saw Jesus. And I think there's another place, another way, where Paul may have been in the presence of Jesus unlike any other human being was.
He was in Arabia for 2 years.
Yeah, let's go to Galatians chapter 2. Excuse me, Galatians chapter 1. This is a really interesting subject. It's hard to know exactly what's meant to be understood here. But I'll tell you where I'm going with this before we even read it. We're going to look at Galatians chapter 1, and then we're going to look at 2 Corinthians chapter 12. It looks like Paul may have been given an experience that was similar to the 12 apostles. It's possible that he was in the presence of God, educated by Jesus in a miraculous way, but given many of the same experiences that the original 12 were. That's sort of a wild idea, but I think when we read these passages, you'll see why there's a lot of people that sort of lean that direction. So let's look at Galatians chapter 1, and if someone could, please read. Let's read verses 11 through 17.
But I make known to you, brethren, by the gospel which was preached by me is not according to man, for I neither received it from man, nor was I taught it, but it came through the revelation of Jesus Christ. For you've heard of my former conduct in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God beyond measure and tried to destroy it. And I advanced in Judaism beyond my contemporaries in my own nation, being more exceedingly zealous for the traditions of my fathers. But when it pleased God, who separated me from my mother's womb and called me through his grace to reveal his Son in me, that I might preach him among the Gentiles, I did not immediately confer with flesh and blood, nor did I go to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me. But I went to Arabia and returned again to Damascus.
And go ahead and read verse 18.
Then after 3 years, I went to Jerusalem to see Peter and remained with him 15 days.
This is really interesting. So, there's a couple of points to be made here. How did Paul, well, let's say this, where did Paul receive his knowledge of the gospel?
Revelation of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, was he taught the revelation? Was he taught the gospel in the same way that the other apostles were? He was not. He didn't see it in the same way they did. He wasn't taught by the other 12 apostles. He says he received his knowledge of the gospel through the revelation of Jesus Christ himself. So that's interesting. Paul understood the gospel. He understood the events in the life of Jesus in the same way that the apostles did, but he didn't learn it in the same way that the apostles did. Or at least not in the same way that you and I might. So that part's interesting. He says he received his knowledge through the revelation of Jesus Christ. And starting around verse 16, after Paul's conversion, where did he go? What was he doing?
Well, he wanted, I was thinking that he wanted to go to Jerusalem. But this says here he went to...
Arabia.
Did he try to teach in Damascus?
Initially he did. But it's interesting here where we do get some of the time frame. It says in verse 16, after his conversion, he did not immediately confer with flesh and blood. So that's an interesting statement. He did not immediately confer with flesh and blood. And then verse 17, he says, I did not go to Jerusalem. I didn't go to be with the other apostles. Initially, he went to Arabia. And how long was he in Arabia?
3 years.
He was there for 3 years.
Verse 18.
Yeah, so you get the feeling that something was going on in Arabia. He says he was not conferring with other people. He was not conferring with the other apostles. He was in Arabia. So he tells us he was in Arabia. He tells us he received his knowledge of the gospel by the revelation of Jesus Christ. So I think part of what he's saying is here is while he was in Arabia, that's where he was getting his knowledge from Jesus himself. So agree with that or don't agree with that is fine. But let's go over to 2 Corinthians chapter 12 because this really validates for us that Paul absolutely had some supernatural experiences through which he came to understand God. And this is why I was saying earlier, it looks like that Paul was given an opportunity to experience firsthand the knowledge of the gospel in a similar way to the original 12. So we look at 2 Corinthians chapter 12, if someone could read verses 1 through 7.
Inexpressible things, things that man is not permitted to tell. I will boast about a man like that, but I will not boast about myself, except about my weaknesses. Even if I should choose to boast, I would not be a fool, because I would be speaking the truth. But I refrain, so no one will think more of me than is warranted by what I do or say, to keep me from becoming conceited because of these surpassing great revelations. There was given me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me.
All right, thanks, Karen. What is Paul talking about here? He's talking about himself. I think we've got to believe that he's talking about himself. And it's funny how he sort of talks about himself in third person, but the reason he does that is for the point he's making. He's saying, you know, me as a human being, as Paul, there's nothing to boast about. But he says, what is worthy of consideration, though, is the experience that Paul received and what qualifies him to be an apostle, in my opinion. So what happened here? What happened with Paul? Yeah. And the funny thing is he kind of says he doesn't know if it was a vision, actually. He says, I don't know if I was in the body or out of the body. I don't know if this was a physical experience or a spiritual experience. But yeah, he says, I had visions in paradise. And what did he hear while he was in paradise?
Inexpressible words.
So he heard a lot, I'm sure, but part of what he heard was things that he can't even speak of, things that can't even be described, things which he says aren't even lawful for a man to utter. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm getting to, is it's possible that this experience here in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 might be the same experience that he's describing in Galatians chapter 1. I can't prove that at all. It's just an idea. And the reason I think that's possible is Paul still had to be credible. He had to be credible. For him to be a witness of Jesus Christ, he had to be credible. And so it helps his credibility. It's just like here. He says, I was in paradise. I was in paradise. And I think based on what you read in Galatians and based on what you read in Acts chapter 9, he could say, I was with Jesus, I saw Jesus, and I was taught by Jesus directly. There's not very many people who could say that, and I think for his work as an apostle, he needed to be able to say that. I saw Jesus, I was with Jesus, and that way I can be a witness of Jesus. That's my take on it. Any other questions or comments? Ben?
So, I think that we can speculate again a little bit that Paul may have had exposure to Jesus in his physical life too.
May have, yeah.
Outside of this event that we've talked about. You know, in Acts 22, Paul, talking about himself, says that he was brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel. And so we find out who this guy is, this Gamaliel person, back in Acts the 5th chapter, where the apostles are taken into prison and the council is trying to decide what to do with them. And this man speaks up and says, well, if this is from God, don't fight it because you're not going to win. Well, that man was on the council. It's possible that Paul, as his student, could have been part of that, could have been part of the proceedings of Jesus' crucifixion, could have been around at that time. I mean, these are all speculations, but it's possible that Paul was there.
Well, and a part of that, too, is what was Paul? What was
a Pharisee.
He was a Pharisee. And who did Jesus spend a lot of time talking to? Pharisees. So, yeah, I think all of that is part of the picture that possibly Paul was in the presence of Jesus at other times. Yeah, that's true.
I think this is conjecture on my part, but I don't believe he saw the resurrecting Jesus with the 120 or whoever was there.
Yeah.
But he saw the resurrected Jesus, which is a step higher than the rest of them had seen. And, you know, so I can boast on Paul, I guess. He didn't know himself, but to me, he was more qualified than any of the other apostles, because he had spent 3 years in the presence of the resurrected Jesus.
Right.
Getting his the message. So no wonder he writes more in the New Testament than in the others.
That's the way I think about it too. And I should have brought attention to this point. How long were the 12 apostles in the presence of Jesus?
3 years.
How long was Paul in Arabia? 3 years. So all that's very interesting. All points to the idea that maybe Paul was getting a special education from Jesus during that time period. So if there's no more comments or questions, Karen.
I'm kind of looking at Galatians 15 through 18 and then back in Acts 9 and trying to fit them together because it says in Galatians that he didn't go to Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
But back in Acts 9, he was in Damascus, but then he did go to Jerusalem.
Right.
So I guess we're assuming there must have been 3 years taking place in Acts 9.
I think there might have been, yeah, because in Acts 9 we really don't get time frames.
Verse 23 says, after many days had gone by.
Yeah.
3 years would be many, many days, but that, I mean, that would make sense. I guess that's the explanation there.
That's the way I look at it, right, because He's so specific in Galatians. I think it's easier to try to make Acts fit Galatians than to make the passage in Galatians fit Acts. Ben?
I've always thought that the 3 years comes between verse 25 and 26 as opposed to between verse 22 and 23.
So you think the reference to going to Jerusalem is after he'd already been there initially?
No. No, I guess I've always thought that he's with the apostles in Damascus, this plot to kill him comes up, and then they set him free in this basket, and that's the point when he goes to Arabia, and then verse 26, when he had come to Jerusalem. That's how I had always understood that.
Well, same difference though, right? That the period between being at Damascus and arriving at Jerusalem. So somewhere in those three verses is 3 years, right? So I think that makes sense. Those are good comments. So still on the topic of appointment, let's talk about the procedure for selecting and we'll use the word installing. And again, that's not a word that you're going to find in the Bible, but it's a word that we understand. Someone can be identified for an office before they're actually installed in that office. You know, it's just like when we have our voting here in the United States. Someone is identified to fill an office, and then it's usually weeks or months later that they're actually installed in that office. So that's what we're talking about here when we talk about installment. And this is really remedial information here, but it's going to be important to talk about later. What was the process for selecting and installing the original 12 apostles? Who selected them? How were they selected? Who installed them? How were they installed?
Simply Jesus.
It was Jesus, right?
Just pick them and follow me.
Yeah, we don't know if there's any kind of formalities involved there. But Jesus picked them, Jesus put them in the office. That's about all there was to it. When we talk about Matthias, what was the situation with Matthias? How was he selected? How was he installed?
They cast lots, and he was selected, he was numbered with the 11.
Yeah, so let's go over to Acts chapter 1. Acts chapter 1, did the other 11 apostles, were they the ones that picked Matthias?
It says they proposed to.
Yeah, so they proposed Matthias, that's exactly right, that's a good point. So they proposed Matthias, and in verse 24 it says, they prayed and said, "You, O Lord, you know the hearts of all, show us which of these two you have chosen." So it was understood by the 12 apostles that even though they identified these two, it was their understanding that God would choose who it was that would fill the place of Judas. And so they cast their lots, and the lots fell on Matthias, and he was just numbered with the 11. So I think that's another point worth making. Jesus chose the original 12. Jesus appointed the original 12. Who chose Matthias? It was God who chose Matthias as well, and he was just numbered with the 12. Again, we don't know if there's any kind of formalities involved there. He was just numbered with the 12.
Do you have any thoughts on this casting their lots? Is that just an expression, or what? Is that some physical...
Yeah, I think they literally probably rolled some dice or drew straws or something. Yeah.
He's similar to the Urim and Thummim, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
That answer of yes or no, or...
Yeah, I think they had some little device or procedure that gave them a yes or a no, and they took that as God's providence. So let's talk about Paul. How was Paul selected? How was Paul appointed? Who selected Paul? Who appointed Paul?
Christ,
right? So this is all very simple information. The reason it's worth talking about, and we'll discuss this more later, is there are some religious organizations who believe in the continuing existence of apostles. And part of the reason that I have objections to the idea of the continuing existence of apostles is I don't see any biblical procedure for selecting, appointing, and installing apostles. Because who did all of that? Jesus personally did all of that. And so, even if this congregation did believe in the continuing existence of apostles, how would we even begin to identify men? How would we even begin to appoint them and install them? There's no biblical procedure at all because Jesus personally accomplished all of that.
I can almost see, I don't even know if it happens, but I could see somebody looking at this example and saying, well, we'll pick out from among us five or six who we think possible.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pray, we'll throw the dice, and whoever comes up, that's what God gave us.
Yeah.
I can see somebody doing that.
Yeah. And so, there's people who do that. What would you... Well, go ahead, Eddie.
I see another point. The spiritual church, the 12 apostles, are part of that foundation. There's no others besides them.
Yeah. How long can you keep building on the foundation? I think that's a good point. Because what did the apostles do? We'll talk about this next week, or actually somebody else will talk about this next week because I'll be out of town, but what were they doing?
Established doctrine that was to never be added to or taken away from.
Right, so that's exactly what Karen said earlier. One of their essential functions was to establish the doctrines of the church. And for apostles to continue to exist and to be fulfilling biblical roles would mean that apostles are continuing to establish doctrine. And so then I start to have a real problem with that, because that would mean that for the last 2,000 years, the Bible's not complete, that the doctrines of the church are not complete, that the foundation is not even done being built. So that doesn't make sense to me. That doesn't make sense to me. And I think there's another big problem too. What all of the apostles in the Bible, so the original 12, Matthias and Paul, like we talked about earlier, what did they all have in common? Besides the fact that Jesus personally appointed them, what else did they all have in common that no one else could have in common with them today?
The Holy Spirit.
Sure, yeah, that's definitely part of it. Yeah, they were all with Jesus in some way, because part of their work was to be a witness of Jesus to the world. Who on this earth now could be a witness to Jesus? Well, nobody, of course. I've never talked to somebody who thought they were an apostle. That's not true. I have talked to somebody who thought they were an apostle. I was in Kansas City. There's a particular denomination that's headquartered out of the Kansas City area, and we went to one of their buildings, and I met an apostle. I wish I would have asked him how he was appointed and how he was selected, because I guess if somebody really wanted to make a case for their own apostleship, they could consider themselves like Paul. You know, they could at least say that, you know, they were educated miraculously through the Holy Spirit. They could at least say that maybe, you know, they were made witnesses of Jesus in the same way that Paul was. But, Duane, you had a comment? Oh, no? Okay.
Well, the thought I just had is that they could say that.
Right.
But how could they prove it? Paul performed several miracles to go along with the things that he taught.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not teaching next week, but I'm going to steal somebody's material. The Bible talks about the signs. Were you going to say this, Ben?
No.
Okay, well, let me say this, and you can make your comment. The Bible talks about the signs of an apostle. What is one thing that an apostle could do that every apostle could do that no one else could? Yeah. Not only did they have miraculous gifts of the Spirit, they could give people miraculous gifts of the Spirit. No one else could do that. And so next time you meet an apostle, ask them to lay hands on somebody so you can see the sign of an apostle. Ben?
So if the apostles were not to be an flock that was continuous,
right?
Why then replace Judas?
That's a good question. I think we'll talk about that next week. Maybe you. Maybe you can talk about that next week. Yeah, good. That's a great question.